You may have heard that everything we need to know we learned in kindergarten. Maybe true. At least we were certainly told or learned there, and maybe even earlier, that we were to stop, look, and listen before we crossed the street. It seems that wisdom works for a lot of life, not just crossing the street. When we want to defend ourselves against a critical comment, we do well to stop, look, and listen. Or when we so easily deflect an affirmation, we do well to stop, look, and listen. A few years back, a certain pastor was sitting on a plane waiting for it to take off. The seat was 14D, the aisle seat, which he liked to be on so that he could get out and not have to crawl or stumble or vault over people. A mother and about a five-year-old were in seats 14E and F, the child by the window seat. It was obvious to the pastor that the child and possibly the mother had rarely or never flown before. And the mother turned to the pastor and said, "I don't do this much. Do you?" And the pastor sort of nodded and tried to go back to his work. And the mother said, "Oh, that must be fun." The pastor knew that it was going to be a long flight to Omaha. The mother volunteered that she and her son were also going to Omaha to visit the boy's father and proceeded to tell the pastor much more than he ever wanted to know about the father and about how this all came to be, that they were going. The pastor opened his laptop, hoping that maybe they would get the hint that he wanted to work, but knew that the sermon that he intended to write on that trip was probably not going to happen. Meanwhile, the young son is also thrilled at the prospect of this plane trip. And as the plane ascends into the air, he looks out the window and he says, "Oh, look at these tiny cars. They look like my Matchbox cars." People rose away. We're now hearing and staring and glaring at row 14. Pastor wanted to crawl under his seat. The flight attendant, after they got to cruising altitude of, 10,000 feet or something, came by and asked row 14 what they wanted to drink. And pastor said he wanted Diet Coke with ice. And mother and son couldn't quite decide. She finally decided on tomato juice, and he on ginger ale. And when it came, the mother marveled at how good this tomato juice tasted, and everyone needed to know how good it tasted. And the boy had never tasted ginger ale before in his life, and that was amazing. And those few extra bags of pretzels were another source of great delight. This went on the whole flight. The clouds were magical. They were being named by the mother and son. There's a dragon and a duck. And whoa, might that be the Mississippi River down there? Suddenly, it dawned on Pastor that these two were possibly the only ones on this plane of over 100 people that was really enjoying this flight. And when the plane finally landed in Omaha, the mother turned to me and said, "Wasn't that a fun trip?" And as I watched this mother and her son almost dance down the aisle, it hit me. What did they have that I didn't have? What was it they knew that I didn't? Why had they enjoyed this trip so much? From beginning to end, while it appeared that all the rest of us were mostly miserable. Maybe it was because they had learned in kindergarten to stop, look, and listen. Well, in our gospel text for today in Matthew chapter 17, Jesus took three disciples up the mountain. It was midpoint in Jesus' journey. The clouds were hanging low over his ministry. The Pharisees and the Sadducees were making life increasingly difficult for him. And the disciples seemed prone to bickering back and forth. And Jesus had a growing sense that this journey was to lead to suffering and possibly death. And he was seeking to prepare his loved ones for that. He talked about losing life in order to save life. And then Jesus took these leaders aside and led them on a hike up the mountain. And there on the mountain, something happened. We're not sure exactly what occurred. It's called transfiguration, which means change or metamorphosis. We are told that Moses and Elijah appear out of nowhere. Jesus' face shone in a way that they had never seen before. His garment glistened and it hurt their eyes. And they heard this voice saying, "This is my beloved son. Do not be afraid." Words also heard at Jesus' baptism. Stop. Look. Listen. And this encounter turned these three disciples inside out, changed their lives. They were never quite the same again, and Simon Peter wanted to stay there forever, but Jesus shook his head, and the vision faded, and Moses and Elijah left just as quickly as they had come, and Jesus and the three made their way back down the winding mountain, the path in the winding mountain. Jesus called this experience a vision in verse 9, and scholars would later describe this as a theophany, a visitation from God. And the disciples would tell over and over again what happened to them that day, that special day when God came down and they beheld God's glory. Now maybe you're wondering, what in the world this story has to do with the mother and the son on the plain? Stop. Look. Listen. It seems to me that in the journey of life, we do well to stop occasionally, at least daily, maybe more often. To quit our doing and just to stop and look and listen. And that's a hard thing for most of us to do. We think we need to be doing something. There's a saying that I like a lot that says, "Don't just do something, stand there." The preacher on the plane missed something because he was busy doing something, thinking he needed to write that sermon instead of sitting there. Mother and a child were focused on being present in the moment. And the reason Jesus took the disciples with him to that quiet place of disengagement was to prepare them to understand all that was about to follow for Jesus and for them. Robert Fulghum tells about a woman who is so stressed by life that she went to see her psychiatrist. After listening for a long time, the psychiatrist took out a pad, his prescription pad, and wrote a prescription and handed it to the woman. And she read the words that the doctor had scribbled, and it said simply, "Spend 1 hour per week watching the sunrise while walking in the cemetery. Thought the stupidest thing she had ever written. She spent $150 for this. But she decided, she paid the money, she'd try it. And one morning as the sun came up, she stood in the cemetery listening to the birds, watching as the world came alive around her. And she found herself slowly coming back to herself, in touch with life, with the brevity of life, with her own journey, with those who had gone before, with those who were yet to come behind her. This past week, I had a conversation with Dr. Carl Yusevich, the chaplain at the Penn Foundation. Many of you know Carl. And he told me that Penn Foundation has seen a dramatic spike in people coming for counseling in recent months. In many cases, he said, the reason people are coming is simply because of unmanaged, uncontrolled anxiety. And I don't know what the counselors are doing, what they're writing on their prescription pads these days, but perhaps more early morning walks in cemeteries might be a good thing for the anxiety gripping our society. Stop, look, listen. We must open our eyes. The mother and the child on the plane saw. They saw things I didn't, out the window, around them. They experienced life in the moment. Those disciples on the mountain had seen things they had never seen before as well. It was a touch of wonder that changed their lives in powerful ways. And I'm convinced there would be many more of those if we chose the discipline of stopping more regularly and being open to wonder and mystery. Moments of that came for me a couple of weeks ago when I was in Vermont, walking down the road on a Sunday afternoon with the gentle snow falling from the sky, everything white and fresh and beautiful, a feast for my eyes, and provided me a moment of wonder and awe, beauty. 2 Peter 1:16, one of the lectionary texts that Steve read for us this morning, says in part, we have been eyewitnesses to the mystery. Eyewitnesses to the mystery. What a great thing to say about Christians and about the church. Eyewitnesses to mystery. But unfortunately, that's not the kind of thing we're hearing people say about the church these days, as it seems many are walking away from it. They are eyewitnesses, but it's not majesty they are seeing too often. One translation of that phrase says this: you do well to pay attention, for when we pay attention, everything changes. Stop, look, listen. One of the things that happens is that our perspective does change. We begin to see a bigger picture. That's, I think, what the disciples saw on the mountain. The bigger picture. They remembered that God had said at Jesus' baptism, "This is my beloved Son." Even though Jesus would suffer, they would remember that. They would later understand that God was in all of those moments, the moments of joy and transfiguration, and the moments of suffering. Very slowly they began to get their minds around and their hearts around this notion of what God was doing right there among them in their day. And they, as disciples, and we as church, participate in this huge thing that we like to call the kingdom of God. God embracing all people of all time and all lands and all colors. Since this is Black History Month in February, it's good to take time to pause and remember the great role that the Black Church played in the Civil Rights Movement. This revolution would have been far different had it not been for courageous pastors and churches and worship and singing among the African American community. Something powerful happened in those meetings, not just in the mass gatherings that we think about in the Civil Rights Movement in Washington, but in those little churches scattered around the country, predominantly, especially in the South. People came to see, they began to have their eyes open, and they listened to sermons, to the I Have a Dream speeches, not only of Martin Luther King, but of their pastors in these congregations. And they began to realize that God was in their lives as well. And they counted, even though all the rest of society had counted them out. They discovered again that they really were somebody, and that deep in their hearts, they could and would overcome injustice, poverty, and a world that treated them as outsiders. They stopped, looked, and listened. And their lives were changed. And we desperately need that renewed vision again for our time. Above everything, we learn that God was there. That's the big picture that kept African Americans going when no one allowed them to vote or have equal opportunities. God was, they believed, infinitely concerned about their lives and their futures. Carlyle Marley was a Southern Baptist preacher, author, and writer of early 20th century. He once said, tongue in cheek, that God doesn't come to church every Sunday. Sometimes he says that God takes the week off because God's God, so God probably wouldn't have to come to church every Sunday. You can argue with his theology. But since we're not God, he says, we need to show up because we just never know when God might show up and slide in the aisle, down the aisle, and slide in the seat beside us. And when that happens, he says, you're going to be changed. No question about it. Transfiguration says that God really does come and meet us where we are, not just on Sunday morning, but Monday morning and Wednesday morning. And finally, I think this story reminds us in the church that life moves on, that we can't stay on the mountain. Reality intrudes. Visions do not last. But hopefully there are enough mountain peaks in our experience to help us in the lonesome valleys of death and end-of-life reflections. Had this been a vision? Had this really happened to the disciples? Because in the moment now, as the disciples looked at Jesus, he's looked just the same as he ever did. And as they looked at his robe, they noticed that it was pretty dirty from the journey up the mountain. And now they heard nothing except the birds singing. as they were back down from the mountain. They could not stay in that place of splendor, nor can we. Reality still intrudes on our lives. Ordinary days morph into another ordinary day. We get depressed. We go to work. We have a wreck. We get out of bed in the morning. We pay our taxes. And life is sometimes tough, but it may have just enough visions because we've dared to stop, look, and listen. But then the real test is, what do we do with those visions? How do we translate those into making our church a better place, our world, a community, a better place? To engage the world, not all of it, but that little piece that we are called to engage. This week begins Lent. Wednesday is Ash Wednesday, and I invite you to come to Blooming Glen, where the three of our congregations will worship together on Wednesday evening and receive ashes. And I hope that you're already considering what spiritual practices you might engage this year. Pope Francis urges us to fast from indifference. And he says, and I quote, "Indifference to our neighbor and to God represents a real temptation for us Christians. Each year during Lent, we need to hear once more the voices of the prophets who cry out and trouble our conscience." Describing this phenomenon he calls the globalization of indifference, he writes that, and I quote, "Whenever our interior life becomes caught up in its own interests and concerns, there's no longer room for others, no place for the poor, and God's voice is no longer heard. The quiet joy of his love is no longer felt, and the desire to do good fades." And he continues that we end up being incapable of feeling compassion at the outcry of the poor, weeping for other people's pain and feeling a need to help them, as though all this were someone else's responsibility and not our own. The quote. Remember the story of the mother and the child on the plain. Remember Jesus and his disciples on the mountain. Remember what he told them. Remember what you learned in kindergarten. Life is short, so stop, look, and listen this week. Enjoy the journey on the mountain, or in the valley, or on the plain. Amen.